Hello.
Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And that's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyslip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Lafayette Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holy Field Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWineMaker.com.
DonColt.biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiasts and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you, bus people.
There they are. Very good. Yeah, that last, yeah, back there. Thank you very much. Must be sitting in the back there. Very wonderful.
Yeah.
Good to have with us.
Or there's always those people that just do it at the end to see if they can get at the end. So,
yeah, they want to be on tape or on the recording, and they're like, oh,
yeah,
just, yeah, at the end.
Yeah,
you know,
that's always those.
Yeah, cool. So. Well, glad to have you with us and the people in the back. That's wonderful. Welcome to All About Wine, and Ron is here, and we are ready to go with some good industry news and topics, and I heard probably some real estate listings, so that's always a lot of fun, and to hear how much things like that cost out there. It's amazing sometimes, but what they're asking.
Yeah.
But who knows? A good investment opportunity. So
a good investment opportunity, always, always.
Yeah,
yeah.
Wine is good, so here we go.
Thank you all for tuning in. We have to first make a comment, too, about the Pensacola rains. 22 inches in 24 hours. That is just unfathomable. I just, wow. So
yeah, I saw photos of that. That is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, 22 inches in 24 hours. They said all broke records and set all sorts of records and everything. They said that for the Tampa area here, what they had one day equals about 8 months of our rain here in Tampa. So. Wow. So, it's just amazing the amount of rain that fell there. We've gotten some storms here, and I've looked at the rain gauge out at the winery, and it would be like 3 inches, and I'm thinking, wow, 3 inches, that's a lot, but 22? So, oh, well. So, we've been, and let me explain something here. We have been trying to get a hold of Texas. In Texas wineries now for, well, we last interviewed him was the end of January. Mike and I was just talking about that before we got on the air here. Last time we talked to Texas Wineries was back in January, and I've been trying to get a hold of them ever since then, and no luck. I don't know. People might be busy. I don't know. The ones I've been calling and people I've been talking to haven't been interested, different things like that. So before we move on to Utah, which is the next one in the States, I'm going to try a couple more sets of emails out to some more Texas wineries and see if we can't get a response, because I really would like to talk to more Texas wineries. And then if we don't have any luck over the next couple of weeks, we're leaving Texas. We're going to go to Utah. And so those of you in Texas, if you're hearing this, let's get you on the air. Those of you in Utah, be prepared. We're going to be coming out to see you next. The real estate, I'm going to talk a little bit about real estate and all that. It's always a fun part of the show and telling you what's going on in real estate and all that. And around the country. First, business opportunities. There's all sorts of groups and stuff that are out there. They're looking for business opportunities. So if you're interested in wine business opportunities, legitimate, these are in a good good classified. It's not some fly-by-night. So if you're interested in wine business opportunities, drop me an email or give me a call even, and I'll give you some information on those. Just, you know, West Coast, basically, on these particular ones, Temecula and stuff like that. But real estate, potential winery vineyard event center. That's how it's advertised. Potential Winery Vineyard Event Center. Currently used as a 175-acre, 18-hole golf course. 22 sewer hookups and entitled to 63 minor inches of rain. It's an entitled to 63 minor. And I don't know what they mean by entitled to. Improvements included remodeled restaurant bar, event center locker rooms, offices with separate kitchen, and maintenance yard. So if you're interested, it is a golf course, an 18-hole golf course right now, but it's could be converted to just about anything that you would like to convert it to. But since this is all about wine, we suggest wine. Again, get in touch. I'll give you the contact information. Here's another one, 86 acres in Walla Walla AVA, Walla Walla, Washington. 86 acres southwest of Walla Walla. Irrigation and permit process, only $850,000 for 86 acres. And I guess that's just land. There's nothing else there but just land. So that's something to consider if you're looking at getting an investment. Walla Walla is a nice area, too. Napa Valley Vineyard for sale, 20 acres of Cabernet Sauvignon. No price, no location, other than just Napa Valley. So, as always, give me a call. Large Mendocino County Vineyard. Weimark Vineyards is owned and well-farmed by the Tyrone family. Location is 10200 West Road. Total acres are 200 with 126 planted acres and a bare land hillside parcel for winery site or to build a home with views. The 126 acres are planted approximately one-half red varieties and one-half white varieties. Grapes recently sold to major Sonoma County wineries. 900,000 plus gross income in 2013. Three reservoirs, two homes, and the building site are included. The vineyard is located 5 minutes off Highway 101 on a paved county road. Priced to sell at $3,150,000. So there you go. Mendocino County, that's just north of Napa, northwest of Napa. Beautiful area up there. I've been there quite a few times over the years, and it's just a gorgeous area. And if they are able to generate $900,000 plus on gross for 2013, your $3,150,000 investment would be paid off in no time. So what a deal, what a deal. Get in touch. I will give you the phone number. Foothill Vineyard, 70 acres with 32-acre vineyard, 9.5 acres of Zinfandel, 9.5 acres of Syrah, 5 acres of Cabernet, I assume Cabernet Sauvignon, 5 acres of Petit Syrah, 5 acres of Vinaux, asking $1.1 million. Cool. 70 acres, $1.1 million. And, you know, you start selling that, you know, you hill country, you can get yourself, $4,000 or $5,000 an acre. So you'll have that $1.1 million paid off in a couple of years. 744-acre ranch and winery for sale. 64 acres planted in 13 varietals. 4,000 square foot main house with pool, manager's house, mobile home, and several outbuildings. Wow. Winery on 32 acre with public tasting room on busy highway. Includes offices, winery cellar, and 850 square foot apartment upstairs. The owner is retiring, so it is available. And I'm sure the owner will help you get yourself going and get yourself started on that and get help with your conversion. So most of them are more than willing to do that. No price and really no location here. So it just says ranch and winery, so it doesn't really give a location. But that is available there too. And let's see, we got grapes available, we got vineyard equipment available, we got crush equipment, we got cellar equipment. We've got all sorts of stuff that is for sale. But we are looking at our real estate on this one. Where is it? And real estate, here we go. Foothill Winery, just for the Missouri Ozarks Winery. Wow, here's a new location for us. 2,000 plus gallon capacity winery, Ozark Mountain AVA. That's in south central Missouri, south of the Ozarks, close to Branson. If it's close enough to Branson, you've got yourself a great income right there, Branson. Just, you know, promote the locale and the closeness to Branson. You can probably generate some business just from that alone. Turnkey operation. Ready to move in. Price includes bulk and bottled inventory. Owner retiring. New owner training available. $215,000. Wow. That's really a pretty good price, you know. I mean, you know, $215,000. And, you know, if you're Ozark Mountain AVA, it depends on where that's located, but that sounds like a pretty good deal there. So, there you go. Get in touch. I will give you contact information. Potential winery or potential vineyard property for sale, 500-acre vineyard site. This is a former orchard in the rolling hills of the Rogue Valley with sunny west slope orientation. Water is available and on the property along with wind machines. Price $25,000 per acre. Great wines are coming out of Southern Oregon. Check the medal winners. Great Appalachian Grant. A Great Appalachian. So a Great AVA. So there you go. There's another one. This is in Southern Oregon. $25,000 per acre, though. Wow. 500 acres. You get a chunk of change there. Placerville Vineyard. Granite Hill Vineyards, a 42-acre property adjacent to the Apple Hill Farms area. 7 acres planted, 2-inch ag water meter, deer fenced with Sierra views. Winery and tasting room can be established by right. So Placerville is snow. Boy, I'll tell you, some of the biggest snows I've ever experienced driving through the hills of California mountains, going out of California, going up to Lake Tahoe, was around Placerville. So I don't know how close that is to the snow area there, but you will get some snow. Yorkville Highlands Estate. I think that's north of north of Napa. I'm not sure. Elegant five-star venue, Grand Estate Home Resort. 21-plus lush acres of bountiful luxury. Vineyards, mountain views, and serene, stately 7,000-square-foot home and inn and wine tasting venue. Approximately 10 minutes to Cloverdale, 30 to Hillsburg. So that is, you know, north of Napa. 5-acre Syrah under contract, 1 acre Primitivo, and 5 additional plantable acres. No price, if you have to ask. So that is, again, in northern 7,000-square-foot home. That's an inn, so it might be divided up for rooms. And that's it, 86 acres in Walla Walla. I just got to talking about that, and we are caught up on our real estate for this week. Anybody out there that listens to this program, if you are a wine real estate agent, if you sell wine, wineries and any of that stuff in anywhere in the country, then let me know. I'd love to get you on the program. Love to do a monthly talk about what's available. You can just talk about your properties and give your contact information and all that stuff. I don't care. Promote yourself all you want. I'd just like to get someone on here. Only thing I would ask is that you just, you know, you give possibilities of stuff as much as you can, just about anywhere. I tried to get a hold of a couple of people and never got responses from them. I don't know why, but, you know, I guess that's the way people are. So, if you are interested, again, if you are anybody out there that's interested in doing some a real estate segment on the program monthly, contact us, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Got some other stuff to talk to you about tonight. Got some other things I want to bring up and share with you, again, in the business and in oops, that's not what I want here. What is this? Ooh. I just pulled up something I didn't know I had there. This is something that, is this the one? No, this isn't the one. Why are you using building relationships and creators? Joy's Joy of Wine. If you're not subscribing to Joy's Joy of Wine, I highly suggest that you do. She comes out with a new blog every Wednesday. It is about wine. That's what she does. It's a wine blog. She also does another blog called A Grave Interest, and it's about cemeteries. So both of those are available on her blog. But Joy's Joy of Wine and A Grave Interest, both of them by Joy. She's located in Indiana, I think, if I remember correctly, Indiana or Illinois, one of those two. I think it's Indiana. But great programs and great blogs, so check it out. But her newest one from yesterday is talking about let's see if my computer settles down and quits bouncing while I'm trying to read something here. Doggone Wines for Your Four-Footed Friends. It's just an article about wines that are coming out that carrying to pet parents and different stuff like that. And the reason it caught my eye is because we are pet-friendly at the winery. We have been pet-friendly for a long, long time. And there's we have events out there that we've done a Greyhound fundraiser just a couple weeks ago. We have we've done a pit bull fundraiser, and we also have a big event we do every year in October called Pasco Pet Fest, which coming up to the second one in first weekend in October this year. A lot of vendors all catering to pets and animals of all sorts and shapes and sizes and types. We had the Pasco Skunk Rescue in attendance last year. I'm sure they'll be there this year. And plus, with others and stuff like that. And we are also now in negotiations with PAWS, P-A-W-S, PAWS, to have a fundraiser coming up here sometime this year also. So we are big-time pet-friendly, and I think it's great when I hear about wineries or when I see wineries or when I talk to wineries that are pet-friendly. I think it's just it's something because there's so many people. Your pets are your family, so it is it's a fun thing. It's a good thing. But Joy's Joy of Wine this week talks about how there are different drinks and stuff that are made for, well, not for, but with pets in mind. And it's, and, you know, I won't go. Check out the website, Joy's Joy of Wine, and you can read the article there about that. It's an interesting article. And so do that. We've talked to a lot of different wineries over the years, too, that have a lot of their labels have their dogs on it or different animals that they are that are on their property and stuff, and they promote it there. So I don't really see a big tie with pets and wine, but yet they always seem to be there. So, you know, it's cool. So it, you know, I don't know. I wanted to bring that up about the pets and all that. But Joy's Joy of Wine, read the article, read her latest blog about pets, and check that out. Let me see. Balancing nature with wine. This is a discussion group that was started not too long ago when I was in, and I found it rather interesting in the fact that they were talking about sustainable wines and stuff. We are looking for organics and stuff, but just all wines itself. What do we do with the bottles when we're done with it? What do we do with the corks, the capsules, the everything, the box that we take the wine in, the bag we take the wine in? I mean, it's great and it's wonderful, and I just. This article here talks a little bit about that, but I'm instead of going into the article with any detail, I just want to paraphrase some of the stuff on this because it talks about what the winery is doing itself. But and as I was reading this article, as I was going through this, I'm thinking, you know, this is great and wonderful. And we've talked to a lot of wineries over the years that were organic. We've talked to some that are even biodynamic. And we have found that, you know, they put a lot of effort into it to be green. We've talked to a winery that was very, very proud of how green they were. We've talked to some that recycles everything after it's used and stuff. And my thought came to me, what are we as customers? I mean, let's forget that, you know, the winery for a moment. And let's think customers. What are you, what are we as customers doing to continue this green? What can we do? What are we doing to continue this green? I mean, I have a lot of people come and ask me if I'm organic, and no, I'm not. I just, it's a process, and we've talked about the process and how it's involved and everything, and so, no, I'm not organic. But, you know, the people are quite concerned that you're organic and that you're, you know, you're very earth-friendly and all that. And I'm thinking more and more, well, then what happens once that bottle leaves the winery? You buy this bottle of wine. I put it in a bag. And I very seldom do people say, I really don't need a bag. I'm just going to put it on the floor in the back seat or something like that. Everybody takes the bag. And if we're so green conscious, let's do away with the bag. And we don't have plastic. I'm not a big plastic fan. I haven't been, you know, much ever. So we don't have plastic. We use the paper, brown paper bags. But then what do you do with the bottle? Now, there's all sorts of recycling places out there. There's all sorts of recycling centers and everything all over this country. And places you can drop the bags are the bottles into it, or the bags, as far as that goes. There's every county, it seems, has some sort of recycling program or something you can drop the bottles in. Some places you can go to a recycling center and get yourself a few bucks for a load of bottles. They do that. So when you finish with that bottle, don't just toss in the garbage. Rinse it out and put it in a box. Put it in your wine box. Sure you have an empty wine box. And then again there, something else. Don't throw away the box. Hang on to the box and use it to fill it back up with your wine bottles, because that's a great place to store them. If they come out of there, they'll fit right back in there, and they're not going to break anything. The corks, they're reusable. They're recyclable, not reusable. You can't reuse them in wine bottles because there's no way you can really sterilize them. But you can recycle them. Gallo, like I mentioned, and we had the promo last year during the holidays, Gallo had this big program that if you sent in any of their wine corks from, I think it was from Halloween through the end of the year through New Year, they were offering $5 to the Senior Meals on Wheels program. A great cause, great thing. I contacted Gallo and asked them what they did with all those corks, and they said that they actually recycled them further from there. They, it wasn't just like another landfill item. They actually went further with the receiving all those corks, which is great, another great thing. You can recycle them too. I know here in Florida, a lot of the ABC liquor stores take wine corks for recycling. I'm sure there are a lot of wine stores and liquor stores and different things around this country that do that. If they don't, check with them. Ask them. Ask them if they do a cork recycling program, or if there's anything that they know of that they can get involved with. This is something that a good idea. It keeps it out. Last week, 22nd was Earth Day, so this is a good time to talk about some of these things that we can do to help the Earth. Every little bit does help a little bit, and all these little bits put together becomes big bits. And so this is what it's all about. I remember the first Earth Day. I was living in California at the time, and it became a pretty big deal, and I'm amazed that it's continued on all these years, and I'm thrilled that it has. But ask your local wine shops, your local liquor stores, if they don't have a cork recycling program, maybe they can start one, or if they know someone who does, or maybe they can check with their distributors or something to see if they can't do a wine recycling, a cork recycling program. So do that, get that. Your capsules, I have been checking around. I've been looking on on the websites and stuff. And you punch in capsules, wine capsules, and you get all sorts of different places where you can buy them. But I haven't found anything where they're recyclable. It's PVC is what it is. The capsules are either PVC or they are foil. If they're foil, they are recyclable with your tin and stuff like that. It's actually a little thin tin foil. But the PVCs, I don't know of any recycling place on that. I haven't been able to find anything or anything that would do on that. But if you find something, let me know. If there's somebody that you know that does recycle the foil and the PVC capsules, let me know. That'd be interesting to find out what they are, and be fun to talk to them too. So if you have someone out there who is doing that, please contact me and let me know so I can find out what the program involves, and maybe more people can start doing that. So bottom line, it's great to be able to find organics and all this stuff, but let's take it a step further. Let's see what we can do with our own bottles, corks, capsules, the bags we carry those home in, the boxes we carry them home in. Instead of just toss them into the garbage when we're done with it, let's see if we can't create more of a recycling program. Everything we use at the winery, we recycle. I'm really big on recycle. When we first opened years ago, we started recycling everything, bottles and papers and everything we possibly can, and we still do it. And it's something that, we're happy that we do it, and hope that our little bit of effort helps. So do your part and get the things out there and start recycling that stuff and get that stuff taken care of. on your end of it. So, and not to go on and preach anymore because I don't want to do it, but recycling is something that's important for all of us. Let's see, that's not what I want to talk about, nor is that, but that is something that I want to do. Is that the one? There it is, yes. This is interesting here. We talked about, I don't know, I think we did a little bit of that. Mike, have we talked about global warming and effect on grapes very much? I'm tending to think we did, but I'm wondering now, have we?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
we
talked, it's a big topic.
You know, but, yeah, and that's just, yeah, exactly. That's just how my reaction is, too. Yes, we have, but, you know, how much? But global warming, in fact, I think I might have talked about it a couple of weeks ago about the two bands around the Earth, or last week about the two bands around the Earth where most of grapes are growing. And the global warming is causing those bands to expand further north and further south. And it's, you know, Montana. I read an article that says Montana may be the next grape growing region. I don't know. They're saying if it does, what are we going to do with all the wildlife over there? But the California drought, researchers have sometimes connected weather extremes to man-made global warming, but usually not done in real time. The studies usually have been, you know, through computer models and stuff like this. Now a study is asserting a link between the climate change and both the intensity of the California drought and of the polar vortex that is blamed on such a harsh winters we had. They're saying that these and studies now are directly linking these two things to global warming. Utah State University scientists involved in the study say they hope they have found what they found can help them predict the next big weird winter. In their words, weird winter. Scientists such as Catherine Hayhoe at Texas Tech University are calling this one of the hottest topics in climate science today. The United States winter this past winter has been one of the strangest that they've had in you know, that anyone can remember. Bitter cold and snowy in the Midwest and East, and warm and very dry in the West. It's just like it was two continents, only it was on the same one here, just like it was divided up. The latest U.S. drought monitor says 100% of California is in an official drought. Wow. I mean, we in here in Florida have experienced our periods of intense drought over the years and stuff like that. And it just, I mean, things dry out and all that. And it just gets nasty. I just saw in the news before we came on the program tonight of some wild, intense fires out in California. And it's just been so dry out there that it's understandable. The new study blames an unusual dipole, the combination of strong western high-pressure ridge and a deep Great Lakes low-pressure trough. That dipole is linked to a recently found precursor to El Nino. If you all are familiar with El Nino, the world weather-changing phenomenon. It's amplified by the buildup of heat-trapping gases. It's like a weather game of dominoes. It starts with cold water off of China and ends up with devastating drought and a memorable winter here in the United States. Climate change to the extreme almost. Simon Wang of the Utah State University says he was looking at cold water off of China and as a precursor to El Nino. The coldest water there triggers westerly winds in the tropical Pacific. These westerly winds then persist for several months, eventually push the warmed up water and air to the Central Pacific, where an El Nino forms. And an El Nino is a warming of the Central Pacific once every few years from a combination of wind and waves in the tropics, and it shakes up the climate around the world, causing the change of rains and temperatures and all this. And this is what they're saying the reason for these strange weather patterns this year is because it did just that. It brought this warm weather pushing into the western United States, in California severe drought, which is affecting grapes and all that, and the cold weather, the mountains have stopped. My daughter lives out in Ogden, Utah, and they just moved there this year, this past November, and everybody's telling her, don't get used to this winter. This isn't our typical winter. This is, you know, and she's telling me, Dad, this is great out here. These winters aren't nearly as bad as what everybody tells me. And I'm telling her, you wait, you know, this is, you know, and it's really been a strange, odd winter. A study is showing that historical data is not too far off. It's not as detailed and doesn't involve numerous computer models, but still it is previous weather patterns over the years that records have been kept have shown that this pattern does affect it like this. Wang did a comparison of burning fossil fuels and showed that it's a link to the warming and the El Nino patterns coming up. So, yeah, I don't want to talk. I don't want to make a comment on why it is. You can make your own decisions on that of why we have global warming. It is warming up, and it's happening. And this recent study here has shown that this California drought, severe California drought, the nasty polar vortex, the winters we've had and all that, are a direct link to the warming of the planet. So, will this continue? Yeah, probably. Will this change how we're growing grapes or where we're growing grapes? Yeah, probably. Will it affect it in our lifetime? Yeah, if you're younger out there listening to this, yeah, it'll probably affect it in your lifetime. How much? I don't know. I'm not a soothsayer. I don't know how much is going to affect it, but it will be affecting it in your lifetime. And so it's something to look at. And it's not, you get the global warming. It's not just here in the United States or China or Australia or any of that. It's everywhere. And it's going to cause places like Chile, it's going to cause the growth of the grapevines to be moved further up the mountains and different areas like that. So it's going to change it and all that, but it will continue on, and events like El Nino is going to continue on. It's going to continue showing and affecting our weather patterns, and which in turn will affect our droughts. Now, on a similar note, now this is something interesting too, and this is why I've mentioned this before, why we need to be concerned about the drought in California. If this ever comes up here and gives me what I want to talk about here on my computer. There it is. Okay. California wines, California grapes, now hold 64% of the U.S. market. California wine sales grew by 5% in 2013. They're up to 64% of total U.S. sales, according to new figures. Now, the total 215 million cases of wine produced in California were shipped within the United States in 2013, up 3% by volume with an estimated retail value of $23.1 billion, up 5% by value. This is from the San Francisco-based Wine Institute, which is not some biased thing. This is the Wine Institute. We talked to the Wine Institute, I think, years ago. Let me take a sip of my wine here. Oh, the wine I am enjoying tonight is my own Plantation Red. Just bottled some this past week. Light, fruity. Got some nice flavors. Not real dry. More of a Beaujolais Nouveau style. Real nice nose on it. I'm thrilled with my red, by the way. I can wax poetic about it, but it is really a pleasant, lighter style red. Not one that you're going to need to put away for years or even a year. It's one you drink, and it's one that's enjoyable with some lighter meals. Great with baked ziti. I absolutely love a good baked ziti in this red. It's a good combination. So that's what I'm enjoying tonight. But let's get back to this. Overall, sales of U.S. wines within all markets, both domestic and international, increased by 3% in volume, up to $36.3 billion, which is attributed to the popularity of higher-end wines priced over $10. The market factors, California wineries focused on sales of premium table wines priced at $10 and above, which increased by 9%. The U.S. Tax and Trade Bureau, TTB, approved nearly 99,000 wine label restorations in 2013. 99,000 wine label were approved in 2013. Oh, my. The majority of which were from foreign producers, which crowded trade channels and vied for consumer attention and shelf space, making for a horrendously competitive market. Over the past 5 years, the number of alcohol production permits in the U.S. increased by 4,100, up 47%, not only for new wineries, but for also that includes craft breweries, distilleries, and cider producers. I can imagine that a majority of those, and I don't know because it's not broken down here, but I can imagine that a majority of those are for the wineries and craft breweries. Craft breweries and beer is becoming just as big as wine now. I have people come in all the time to the winery talking about how they actually visit breweries, little small craft breweries around the country, as much as they visit wineries. Retail outlets selling wine have increased by expanding to 62,000 locations over the past 5 years. That's expanded by 62,000 locations over the last 5 years. That's up 12% to 550,000 outlets around the United States where you can buy wine. 550,000 outlets. And then we talked to some of these states that restricted so much. Pennsylvania, for example. Now, I understand Pennsylvania's changing. I've had some people in from Pennsylvania over the last couple weeks, and they're saying that Pennsylvania is probably and looking at getting away from their state stores and going into private stores. I don't know. I haven't heard any more than that, but it might be worth a phone. I'll see if I can't get a hold of our lawyer. We talked to a lawyer way back
Lancaster.
Yep. And Jason was the wine attorney we talked to. And I need to get a hold of him and ask what's happening in Pennsylvania. Because I've had some people come in from Pennsylvania lately telling me that Pennsylvania is really drastically changing. So I'll see if I can't get a hold of Jason and see if he can't come on and explain to us what's going on in Pennsylvania. But 550,000 outlets to buy wine in this country. Wow. They are spending more. According to Nelson, the most popular styles in the U.S. were Chardonnay at 20%. Cabernet, and I tell people, Chardonnay is number one selling wine in this country. And everybody's going, no, I can't believe that. I can't believe that. And I said, yeah. I said, you put number two and three together, and you just barely pass Chardonnay. Here you go. Cabernet Sauvignon, 13%, and Merlot, 9%. So that's 22% there. Chardonnay runs 20%. I mean, you know, it's just, it's true. It's Cabernet, I thought Merlot was closer to Cabernet than 9% and 13%. But still, though, there you go. It's really amazing how much Chardonnay just runs away with the sales in this country. And then red blends and sweet reds, which I still think is a contradiction of the term sweet reds. But red blends and sweet reds run 9%. Pinot Grigio, 9%, followed by Moscato, up to 6%. And that is obviously the wine du jour now. We're hearing a lot of people love the Moscato. All of a sudden, it becomes the wine to drink. White Zinfandel at 5%, Pinot Noir at 4%, and Sauvignon Blanc at 4%. Moscato and Malbec and red blends experienced double-digit growth, with the next biggest growth in sales seen with Pinot Grigio and Pinot Noir. Wine exports from U.S. totaled $1.55 billion in 2013, with the European Union being the top destination. That was followed by Canada, Japan, which is down by 7%. Canada's up 12%. Hong Kong down 12%. China up 6%. Mexico up 21%. And South Korea up 16%. So, but yeah, this is what California is booming. It's exploding in sales. This drought could affect them. But not only are they selling a lot of wine, as I just mentioned here, but they are also selling a lot of grapes and juice all around the country. And I've said this before, I know I have, but a lot of juice and a lot of grapes and a lot of wine is being sold from California wineries. There are some enormous wineries in California that it's hard to imagine the size of some of these. I've been to some of them out there, and you walk and it's like, you know, you walk through the redwoods and you see these enormous trees all around you. Well, this is the way it is in some of these big wineries there. You walk through them and you have these million-gallon tanks, and you're walking among these million-gallon tanks, and they're shipping it all over this country and all over the world. I mean, it's just, you know, wine's all over. I was visiting this one, and they were filling up this a quarter of a million-gallon bladder that they were shipping, and I go, what is this? And they said, it's a Riesling. And I go, oh, why is it, where are you shipping this to? And they said, Germany. I go, you're shipping a Riesling to Germany, who is really the home of Riesling? And he goes, yeah. He said, they are going through so much, they use this as supplement. So California ships everywhere, and the more the drought affects it, the more it's going to affect all of us in scarcity and in price. So I want to talk a little bit about what's happening in sales and all that on that, too. Gallo Winery has bought out Solano Vineyards. Just recently, Gallo has added another winery to their big umbrella of their big wine family. The North Bay Business Journal. Come on. There you go. The North Bay Business Journal reports that E&J Gallo purchased 230-acre western Solano County vineyard and winery. And it's a 401-acre ranch for Ledgewood Creek Winery and a Sassoon Valley wine-growing region just east of Napa Valley. But it's still classified as a North Coast appellation. So Napa has expanded, Gallo has expanded their umbrella of wine families even more, which doesn't surprise me. It should not surprise you. They are enormous out there. Growlers. We talked about this before, growlers and all this. Florida just has been passing and been playing around. They just passed a law about growlers, and it's for beer. The small breweries are up in arms. They're saying that it's just going to hurt their business and it's going to affect them and stuff like this. And the bigger ones are saying, yeah, this is great, this is wonderful and all that. The reason I bring it up, and I know it's beer, is because the beer and wine license is basically the same license. I mean, if you, you can go in and, you know, do you sell liquor? No, but I have beer and wine. You know, it's the same license. You know, and so this is what effects beer can eventually affect wine. And the way they're doing this program with this growlers, I haven't read it all. I need to look up the actual law, so I don't want to start spouting off on it yet until I actually read the law. But this is something that I think we need to keep an eye on here, because if this starts to expand and starts to explode and starts to affect breweries, it could affect wineries. I don't know. So I will check more on that. If anybody out there is listening who knows more about it, then drop me a link to an article or anything. I don't care. But Florida is changing laws. On Friday, Oregon announced that the Federal Alcohol and Tobacco Trade Tax and Trade Bureau, the TTB, has backed off on their previous ruling that selling wine in refillable containers was illegal and had to have a bottling license. We talked about this one before, too, that if you're going to sell it in a big containers, the growlers in a winery, you had to have a bottling license. And the TTB backed off of that. They're letting Oregon now, wine growers sought to take advantage of the huge growth of popularity of beer growlers, and they passed a law last year allowing stores and restaurants to pour wine into containers brought in by customers. Wineries saw the change as a chance to broaden their reach and give customers less expensive and eco-friendly way to try different varieties. But then the TTB says, wait a minute, you can't do that unless you have the proper license, and that would be bottling license for the growlers. So they fought it. The Oregon fought it, and the TTB backed off. Now they can sell it in the growlers or any other container that people bring in. So it is a good move on that end. And that's another thing, too, because if TTB backs off of Oregon, they set a precedent which could help a lot of other areas do the same. So we hope so anyway. We hope it works that way. But the growlers, what's going on here in Florida, though, I really, I am cautiously aware of what's going on. But again, it's beer and it's not wine, but they're both basically under the same thing. New U.S. wine brand is now targeting menopausal women. They're coming out with a series of wines called Hot Flash Wines. I wonder if that has anything to do with Kelly and Hoda on the morning show, who is always drinking wines. But Hot Flash Wines. Hot Flash Wines is a startup wine business based in California. The company's founder rejects the idea of using diet alcoholic drinks to appeal to women, as it alienates a large percentage of women drinkers. It says, we are insistently bombarded with diet conscious alcohol like skinny girl margaritas. There's nothing really out there for women our age, nothing specific for us. So Hot Flash Wines range currently offers three varietal wines: Mood Swing Merlot, Covers Off Chardonnay, and Crabby Cabby for menopausal women. So I think that's funny. As well as a sparkling wine. A lot of women have left still wines and are drinking more bubbly, and they would like to build on that. Hot Flash Wines are currently built, has currently built its brand primarily through its website and its Facebook page and Twitter page at Hot Flash Wines. So you can check that out. Though wine is the primary focus, the company's hopes to expand through sales of other merchandise such as branded T-shirts and skincare products, billing the brand as a lifestyle rather than just another wine product.
So chemically, it's probably the same stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's just, let's come up with something that,
Something new. Yeah, that's all. Just the company's founder is Molly McCarthy Openshaw. So she's the founder of it. Yeah, it's probably the exact same stuff. There's nothing new or any different about it. It's just that she's targeting menopausal women, and from what she says in this article here and from the comments, she is in that category, and so therefore she wanted something to find the perfect balance and consistency of the wine and the everything, and she felt that she has. It says it's community built behind the brand and a significant following in the short months it has existed in the United States. But whether this business model would have similar success in the United Kingdom and other markets is still up for debate. So, menopausal wine, hot flash wine, you can look for, again, you can look for the different different ones, Cabby, Mood Swing Merlot, and Covers Off Chardonnay. I like it. Good for her. Let's see. I think that might be what I want to talk about. Yep, that was it. So, AFRN, thanks for tuning in. And we appreciate you being part of the program. Look forward to hearing and seeing you next week. So, we are we're done. I just, some topics there. We will continue on trying to get some Texas wineries. Hopefully, I'm going to be able to still talk to Texas wineries. It's a big state, and we haven't talked to nearly as many as I would like to. So we'll try it again. Again, I asked for help on some of these things during this program. Know anything about capsule recycling, a real estate agent, Texas wineries, Utah wineries, get in touch. And I'll be following up on that.
Yeah, very cool. I was on the Armed Forces Radio Network website a couple of days ago, and I just pulled it up again. But you want to find out what programming they have and more information on what they provide and their services and everything, it's armedforcesradionetwork.org, O-R-G, armedforcesradionetwork.org. And we are actually on Tuesdays and Thursdays there. Yeah, 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. on Tuesday, and then 11 a.m. on Thursday, according to the schedule page. So they're starting to put the times down, and now we can say, oh, so we're on twice a week on the Armed Forces Radio Network, three times a week, but it's on 2 days. So Tuesdays and Thursdays. And so it's fantastic. So we're reaching quite a bit of an audience there. So that's cool.
Armed Forces Radio Network.org, if you all want to check that out.
And then click on the schedule button somewhere on there, and you'll see the other shows that they have. It's pretty cool. They do have some programming available there. So great organization, and it's very cool. So
It is. We're actually very proud that we are part of their programming. Mm-hmm.
Very good. So we're actually on Thursdays, but it's 11 p.m. and it's probably a delay or an older show, but that's cool.
I didn't know we were on that much. I thought it was just Tuesday. That's cool.
Yeah, a couple of days ago, I was looking at it and going, let me see if they have it.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, awesome. So thank you very much.
Here's something else I just saw here. You're talking about climate change and all that tonight, and there has been a study specifically on climate change, the effect of quality of grapes, and they have pinpointed the Tempranillo grape variety, and they've come to the conclusion that it is affecting the Tempranillo. The warm weather is starting to affect it, the increased presence of CO2, and it's raising the temperatures, causing it to be more acidic. And the winemakers are having a harder time pulling the acid out or getting a balance. So Tempranillo has been studied, and it is being studied for climate change, and it is affecting the grape. If you want to check out that research, it is on, phys.org, and it's an article on phys.org. It's a physics site. So check that out if you want to read some more about the Tempranillo and how the climate change is affecting that grape. So we were talking about climate change. I wanted to bring that up.
Yep. Very good. All right. We will go ahead and close the show for now. I don't believe you have any events this weekend.
Not this weekend. No, nope. We got a storm coming through this weekend, so it works well.
Okay. Yeah. So the football team, the Storm, will be playing this weekend somewhere. What is that, the AFL or something? What league is that?
Arena.
Arena Football League. Yeah,
Arena.
Arena Football League. They'll be, I don't know when they get that, but anyway, our team is called the Storm. And it's very fitting because, it's gonna turn downhill, I think, tomorrow. Sometime was supposed to be pretty bad, and then just getting bad for the weekend. But not quite as bad as it has up north from the Panhandle, Georgia, Alabama. All the southern states have just been hammered this last storm. It's amazing, and seeing all the damage and everything. And we hope everybody pulls out of that. As always, we do. So,
and our thoughts are with them too. Our thoughts are with all of them.
Yep. That's the way we operate. So we agree. Always spring back, right? That's what they did with Homestead.
Did to Joplin. That's what they did everywhere. You know, they can spring back.
That's right. So we will go ahead and end the show, and we will see you all next Thursday, May the 8th, if you're listening to us live or within reason. May the 8th will be the next show.
Happy Cinco de Mayo for all of you who celebrate Cinco de Mayo.
I will be out of town, so I'll be
Will you?
Post-game. Right. Oh, yeah. Going someplace. Cool. Yeah, I'll be back for the show.
I heard that the United States celebrates Cinco de Mayo more than the Mexicans do.
Well, it's all commercialized here. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's probably just another day, but, it's turning into commercial. Car dealership. Okay. This is the part we're talking about things other than wine.
And that's where we start jabbering out.
we have to look at the heading at the top. Of, this is wine show. Okay. Thank you all for tuning in again, and May the 8th, next show, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio, also in archives on Blog Talk Radio on the show page, and on iTunes as a free download, and, of course, the replays on Armed Forces Radio Network and who knows elsewhere. So floating around in space somewhere. Thanks for tuning in, and hope you tune in next time. And, again, if you want to contact us, you want to be a guest, you want to talk about something related to wine, the industry, then get in touch with us. And the information, I believe, is in the outro. So we'll see you all next time.
Thank you all very much. Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.